We've all heard the phrase, timing is everything. Well, Daniel Pink would agree, but he says the science of timing is not something we pay attention to often enough.
A lot of us, when we make our decisions about timing, that is when to do stuff, we make the decisions based on intuition and guesswork, and that's the wrong way to do it, because there's this rich body of research out there across many, many, many disciplines, from economics to psychology to endocrinology to a whole field called chronobiology that offers us evidence, facts, data for making these when decisions in a smarter, shrewder, more intelligent way.
In his new book, When: The Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing, Pink explores these ideas behind when we do things and comes up with a lot of really good advice for how we organize our everyday lives. I got a hold of him via Skype to talk more about it.
So I think one of the big ideas in the book is that each day has a hidden pattern, that we tend to move through the day in three stages: peak, trough, recovery. And the point of all of this is that our brain power doesn't remain the same over the course of the day. It changes. It changes in predictable ways. And this science gives us some clues about how to do the right things at the right time. For instance, during the peak, which for most of us is the morning, that's when we are highest in vigilance. And what does it mean to be vigilant? Vigilant means that you're able to bat away distractions more easily. So that makes it the ideal time to do analytic work, work that requires heads down, focus, and attention. During the trough, which almost everybody is like basically the early afternoon to mid-afternoon, there's some really bad stuff that happens in the trough. What we know is, for instance, in medicine, it is that anesthesia errors are 4 times more likely at 3 p.m. Wow. than at 9 a.m. We know that certain elements of corporate performance drops in this. We know that there are more car accidents between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. We know that standardized test scores for students go down. I mean, it's a dangerous period.
So if you have that structure and you can kind of see that in your own life, this could have some serious implications on how we all structure our time. Do you think that the way in which our society works, like our 9-to-5 work schedule or when rush hour hits, like, do we work within that well at all? Or would we have to change that to adapt to this better?
I think we need to adapt to it much better in a number of different ways. So we're not very intentional about when we do things. We think it doesn't matter that much. And we're very intentional on the job about who we do stuff with. We have HR departments, what we do, you know, people have to-do lists, all right? But when it comes to when we do things, we think it doesn't matter. And it matters a lot. That is, about 20% of the difference in performance among people is attributable to time of day. And one area where you see this is in meetings. If you think about this, people spend, you know, huge portions of time in meetings. Yet when we schedule meetings in organizations, the only criterion that we use is availability. All right. Hey, is Lauren available and is conference room 3C open?
Right.
All right. That's all we think about. And we don't say, who's going to be at this meeting? People who are better in the morning or people who are better in the evening or, you know, later in the day? What kind of meeting is this? Do we need people to be locked down and focused and analytical? Do we need people to be much more, a little bit more freewheeling and mentally loose? Is this purely, we don't think about that.
Right.
We just think about availability. And so what happens is that, you know, you have an office full of people who, you know, good at doing their analytic work in the morning, and the boss comes in and says, oh, okay, from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., this peak vigilant time, we're going to have a meeting about the travel voucher policy, all right? And, you know, squandering that time. Or you have, you know, I talked to an executive in Silicon Valley. She was saying, oh, yeah, we do our product review sessions at 2 p.m. I'm like, that's about the worst time of day to do something like that.
Yeah. So you're also looking at these sort of lifelong timelines as well, like the ideal age to get married was one I saw written about. What are some of those, and how can we use those to our advantage?
Yeah, there are all kinds of things. Like, so this goes, the research goes well beyond, as you say, the concept of the day to, you know, how do beginnings affect us? How do midpoints affect us? How do endings affect us? So think about this. There's some interesting research showing the age at which people are most likely to run their first marathon. Okay, think about people running a marathon. The age at which people are most likely to run their first marathon is age 29. Okay, kind of peculiar.
Yeah.
But it turns out that 29-year-olds are twice as likely to run a first marathon as 28-year-olds or 30-year-olds. Huh. Now, another age, 39. Another age, 49. 49-year-olds are 3 times as likely to run a first marathon as 50-year-olds. And so what happens is that these that endings have a huge effect on our behavior.
Like this is the end of my 20s, right?
Exactly. Precisely. We kick a little harder. It can trigger a search for meaning. So when we're thinking about how do we motivate ourselves, how do we motivate others, you know, making endings more visible is helpful. Endings have another really interesting effect. I mean, one of the most useful takeaways for me was this. You know, think about the famous line, I've got some good news and some bad news, all right? So you're delivering good news and bad news. Which should you deliver first, the good news or the bad news?
I would say the bad news. That's okay. What I would say.
I'll tell you, I always gave the good news first. Because I'll tell you why, though. I think I have a good argument, okay. Which is that, you know, it's uncomfortable giving bad news, so you want to ease into it. I feel like if you give bad news right away, people will just shut down. You don't want to be a jerk, so you want to sort of lay down a cushion before delivering the hammer. Those are very good reasons, except for this. Imagine being on the receiving end of good news and bad news. What do you think people want to hear first? The good news first or the bad news first? What do you want to hear first?
I would want to hear the bad news first so I could end on a high note, I guess.
Me too. Exactly. All right. So I want, and here's the thing. Most people in this research, they want the bad news first.
Yeah.
I want the bad news first, even though I always gave the good news first because I'm somehow incapable of saying that other people are like me.
Right.
And what this shows is another powerful effect of ending. Is that given a choice, people prefer endings that elevate. We prefer rising sequences to declining sequences sure. at the end. And so for me, I've totally changed the way I do it. I always give the bad news first and the good news next. And none of this like feedback sandwich where it's like good, bad, good.
Right. This all makes me think of the George Costanza scene where he wants to leave on a high note.
Right.
Okay. Right. So how has researching this and writing this book changed the way that you live? What are some of the biggest takeaways that you've taken into your own life?
I'm a writer, so I do all my, and a morning person, so I do all my writing in the morning. I've changed the way I do that. So what I do is I go to my office in the morning, I give myself a word count, say 800 words. I don't bring in my phone, I don't do anything else until I hit that word count, so I don't squander that peak time. And I do interviews like this, you know, I'm serious. I'm talking to you it happens to be at 4 in the afternoon my time. That's by design. You know, I don't want to have an interview about this cool stuff at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when, you know, I have to like chew on my arm to keep myself awake.
Well, Daniel Pink, he is a journalist and the author of When the Scientific Secrets of Perfect Timing. Daniel, thanks so much for coming on.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.